Welcome to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, and in this episode, I'll be talking to Richard Buxton, who's a freelance writer, and he covers Liverpool. He's on to share his thoughts on Liverpool ahead of the match against Fulham. This is our view of the opposition show, which is our preview for the upcoming match. I look forward to doing this show, but before I do anything else, I have to welcome back a guest who hasn't been with me for a very long time, a friend of mine, Mr. Buxton. Richard, how you doing?
I'm good, Russ, and yourself?
I am well. It's been a long time since we've spoken. Obviously, Fulham have been out of the Premier League for several years, but we're back. So now we can actually break down a match, and let's just get right into it. Just share with me your views overall the season so far for Liverpool in the Premier League. We'll start there.
I think in the Premier League area, it's probably been as good as it's ever been. I think they're on course potentially on Sunday, and your listeners aren't going to like this being of the Fulham persuasion. They're on course to equal their best modern era return from their opening 12 games. They've been really, really good in the league. Obviously, they've had a few blips, if you could call them that, with draws against City, Arsenal and Chelsea. But 27 points from 33 is pretty good, considering they've come up against a couple of the top four rivals. They're looking really good in terms of the style of the play. There's maybe a few question marks over the rate of return from the main goal scorers, Sadio Mane, Mohamed Salah, and Roberto Firmino. And obviously, there's been a few, probably concerns about the defence in recent weeks, because there's been a few notable errors and a few notable flaws. But in the main, I think Liverpool are probably looking as good as they have been for a while to challenge for a Premier League title.
Okay, excellent. Let's go back. I want to get your view of the Arsenal match. I watched it. Do you view this as 2 points dropped or just a good result for Liverpool against Arsenal? I'm curious your view of that match.
I think you have to look at it in the view of where Arsenal are as well as where Liverpool are. And it applies as well to the other two draws in the league against City and Chelsea. They're obviously games that were not going to be guaranteed 3 pointers. There's obviously going to be, you know, some very close battles. I don't know if you remember the Man City game where Riyad Mahrez missed a penalty, which could have changed it. And they had a Daniel Sturridge equaliser to thank for saving a point against Chelsea when it looked like that game had been getting away from them. So I think in the context of points won or dropped, I think there's probably probably a point earned really for Liverpool in those games.
Okay, excellent there, my friend. All right. Let's transition. Let's talk about the Champions League. Obviously, there was a bad result this week in the Champions League. But overall, what has been the issues in the Champions League for Liverpool? Because it obviously hasn't been the same as it has been in the Premier League.
It's hard to pinpoint exactly what's been wrong with Liverpool in the Champions League. I mean, there's been a few problems. Obviously, they've suffered two defeats now against Napoli and Red Star Belgrade. And they edged out Paris Saint-Germain. And that was a game which was getting away from them, notably in the second half when Mbappe scored the equaliser and it came to the stoppage time and they got the winner. So there's obviously questions there. I don't know if it's a case of there's a hangover from last season's final when they obviously lost to Real Madrid in very difficult circumstances, or whether because they're dealing with relatively unknown quantities in terms of teams they faced. They haven't faced PSG for a good 20 years in any European competition. They haven't faced Napoli for 8 years, and that was in the Europa League. Red Star, you have to go back probably 40 years. I mean, this isn't, it's not really an excuse, but there doesn't seem to be a specific reason. And that's the problem with Liverpool at the moment. It seems to be that maybe because the momentum in the league is so great and they've gone on this unbeaten run and are doing so well in terms of performances and against some of the bigger teams in their own league, maybe the Champions League, they are caught slipping a little bit because maintaining the momentum is probably not a bigger priority than potentially winning the Premier League this year, which does seem to be the main objective for Jurgen Klopp from what we can see so far.
Okay, very good there, my friend. I've been fascinated with the differences between leagues of how they're playing in the Champions League and compared to how they're playing in the Premier League. But let's focus on last season compared to this season. And I guess we could look at it twofold, the Champions League and also in the Premier League. Richard, what have been the differences between Liverpool from last season to this season?
I think personnel has been a big, big factor. I mean, they've obviously replaced the goalkeeper. They've obviously given
Loris Karius. It's been excellent.
Alisson Becker's been absolutely superb. And you look at what he replaced in in Loris Karius, who was, in my opinion, he probably should have been moved on, whether on a loan or a permanent deal, probably 12 months earlier than he was in the end, because his debut season, although it's probably a bit harsh to judge him on it, it was really, really poor. There were a lot of glaring errors, and it became a case of he was the lesser of two evils after Simon Mignolet had been the lesser of two evils earlier in that season. So it kind of alternated between the goalkeepers who were having problems. Mignolet, it has to be said, has been, he's made no secret that he wants regular first team football, but he's obviously quite dignified about it at the moment. He's not kicking up much of a stink, although he did have a few things to say after a few offers were turned down over the summer because Liverpool couldn't find an adequate backup in the event of Alisson getting injured. But I think Alisson's probably been the biggest thing. I think this people see similarities with Bruce Grobbelaar, one of the more successful goalkeepers of Liverpool's past, quite a flamboyant character, and you know, wasn't partial to venturing out of his goal line or juggling the ball about in the penalty area and that sort of thing. And Liverpool seen that with Alisson already, and it may be too early to make comparisons, but there's definitely parallels in terms of the approach to goalkeeping, because Alisson is probably what Liverpool needed last season, what they definitely needed in the Champions League final last year, and probably what they've needed for a good 5 years since Pepe Reina left, because Simon Mignolet, good at the goalkeeper as he is, he isn't the standard that Liverpool need to challenge right. titles. Beyond that, I think probably defensively, the addition of Virgil van Dijk has been a definite positive. I think, you're seeing a long-term successor that wasn't there maybe when the likes of Jamie Carragher and Sammy Hippier moved on. You know, Liverpool have had, they've had competent defenders, but not ones who you consider to be capable of taking them to that next level. Van Dijk's quite statuesque, quite tall. He puts a commanding presence up. He's quite vocal. Again, something Liverpool have lacked in defence since Carragher left, I would say. So there's been a lot to be taken from that. And also, it's not just what Van Dijk brings in terms of his personal presence. It's what he brings to the other players. He's obviously taken Joe Gomez under his wing, who's quite a versatile defender. And he's become a virtually first choice in defence, with Dejan Lovren struggling for injuries recently, and obviously having to recover from reaching a World Cup final and all the exertions that came with that. But I think even Lovren's probably profited a little bit from Van Dijk being there. There have been obviously some drawbacks with that. He has come in for some criticism over a few mistakes here and there, notably against Red Star Belgrade recently, and even the Leicester City win in September, when Alisson was roundly criticised because he tried to play the ball out from the back when there was a lurking threat. And what a lot of people tended to overlook was it wasn't just the goalkeepers clowning around and it's all on him. It was actually Van Dijk choosing to play it backwards. Yep. When he probably could have taken it, let's say, a more safer option. But I probably think defence has probably been the biggest difference. But I think as well, there's other aspects of Liverpool's personnel which are going to take time to improve and develop. I think notably in midfield, with there's two holding options, Naby Keita and Fabinho. They've come in for very big fees. We're talking close to £100 million. And they had quite slow starts. I mean, nothing alarming, nothing abject, just not really had a grip on games the way people, I think, imagined and had thought. And there does seem to be a bit of a cult following for Fabinho. Every time he doesn't play, there's questions. Why isn't he playing? And you know, he should be playing. And what a lot of Liverpool fans tend to forget is that, you know, not every player who comes in the summer is a guaranteed starter. You know, but there is that adjustment period. Not everybody can settle the way Alisson has or has been required to. There's always that bedding in period. And, you know, unless you're familiar with the league, like Van Dijk was and like Jadon Sakiri was previously, you're not going to hit the ground running. So players adapting to a different culture, a different quote, a different way of playing, particularly with the Premier League being a bit more, let's say, breakneck than the League One and the Bundesliga than those two players are used to. It's going to take some time, but I think in terms of the biggest difference, I think they may, again, and I don't like making the comparisons here, but there's potential that those two players could form a link that probably has been missing for a good decade. And, you know, when Liverpool had what the fans used to call the best midfield in the world,
right,
Steven Gerrard and Xabi Alonso and Javier Mascherano and those sorts of players who could make an impact in the middle, and also break the play up. And I think that's probably what a lot of fans are expecting for Fabinho and Keita. But whether it comes off, obviously, we won't know until probably the end of the season, and we can get a better picture of it, because at the moment it's only based on the reputations rather than the reality.
Right, the execution, that will come in time, and you'll be able to assess if they're up for that type of praise, you know, to get to that level. I'm glad that you went into detail about that, Richard. While you're talking, I'm thinking about this comparison, because for Liverpool to win the league, they have to jump over Manchester City, and I've seen Manchester City, and they are a juggernaut. You know this. You've covered them, so you know how good they are. What does Liverpool need to do to get to that level? Because that level is insane.
It's very difficult, and I think, as with a lot of Liverpool's failed types of challenges, it's been about what the other teams do rather than what they do. Of course, there have been notable exceptions. I think the one that springs to mind, probably most recently, was the 2014 one where they threw away a lead against Chelsea, and the point lead again, and lost to Chelsea, and then tried to chase a goal deficit against Crystal Palace and drew that game and fell 2 points short. So that was obviously self-inflicted. And there's been other examples, notably the 96-97 season, where they were on the brink of a title and it looked like it was going to happen. And then the final run of games, they lost to Man United, and they lost to some teams that they shouldn't have lost to, really, based on the squad they had and the opponents they were facing. And quite catastrophically, they finished fourth in a two-horse race. And that's the sort of thing that, you know, Liverpool have tried to guard against in recent times. And I think Jürgen Klopp's done it incredibly well. But again, it comes down to what the other teams do. And City have been, I mean, City have really raised the bar. And, yeah, you know, people are debating, have City ribbon football? Because they're having a dominance that Guardiola didn't enjoy at Barcelona. Real Madrid have never enjoyed with the Galacticos. Even Bayern Munich and Germany haven't enjoyed anything like this. And, you know, even Manchester United, who, you know, City were so intent on toppling.
Richard, let me ask you, do you think it's really, could depth be the difference? You know, and again, I know that's simplistic to say that it's depth because they're just so dynamic and it's Pep's system, but they can come at you in waves, you know, and if someone goes out, you know, if De Bruyne is injured, the train doesn't stop.
Absolutely, and this is where Liverpool have definitely been trying to strengthen over the summer, obviously with the midfield options coming in, obviously with the new goalkeeper. And I think probably the addition of Xherdan Shaqiri is probably quite crucial, because that does offer them a depth that if Salah's struggling or Firmino's struggling, they can bring him on. They've obviously still got Daniel Sturridge, who has had a decent return to form. He's obviously tailed off a little bit recently, but he hit three goals in three successive outings in September, and he's come back from the brink, essentially, as a Liverpool player, because when he went on loan to West Brom, no one thought he was coming back from that. That was it, you know. Once you're out on loan, that's the end of your Liverpool career, essentially, for a lot of players. Not many come back from it. I don't think that many come back from it, really. But I think that Liverpool have a better depth in terms of the option. But as you say, City have just got an immense amount of depth. As you say, De Bruyne doesn't play. They've got Raheem Sterling. Sterling doesn't play. You've got Leroy Sané. I mean, you know, this is what Liverpool are up against. And, you know, this is why it's all about what Liverpool have to face rather than what Liverpool do themselves at the moment, because it brings back memories of the last time they went really, really close and just fell short through no fault of their own. I mean, they finished second with 86 points in 2008-09, and United finished with a further 4 points. Now, most seasons, 86 points will win you the title. Liverpool's depth probably wasn't as good then, but for the time, it was probably as good as they were going to get. United just had that little bit extra. They were getting the rub of the green. And, you know, you can't account for City running away with it. We didn't think they were going to get 100 points last season. I certainly didn't. And I covered them quite extensively last season. But you just wonder, what will it take for this to come unravelling? Because you saw it yourself, Russ, when the form were in the Premier League back in the day, about 10 years ago, you had United, Arsenal and Chelsea all vying for the title. There was never just one team running away with it. You always had, okay, United will win it a few years on the bounce, but there was always a team up there challenging them. It was always a Liverpool or a Chelsea or an Arsenal. There was never that monopoly that City are enjoying. And you know, you can't knock them for it. Obviously, they've invested heavily in, you know. I know there's obviously a lot of questions being asked about City at the moment and a lot of scrutiny coming their way, but you know, they recruited well. They recruited smartly. I mean, you can't really knock them for that. But in terms of where Liverpool, if Liverpool can topple them, I think it's going to come down to mental fortitude. And you know, if City's levels drop, that's when Liverpool and Chelsea, I'd say, and maybe even Tottenham and Arsenal might have a sniff that this isn't as much a foregone conclusion as it appears. And there might be some hope there. But again, I think the problem is that City have got such a remarkable depth. I mean, you know, you can make four or five teams out of 13. So, you know, you have to wonder, what will it take?
That's why I wanted to ask you, my friend, because I find what they're doing fascinating. And to see it up front, watching them play Fulham now twice, and in the Carabao Cup, it's still, you know, some of their key players, even though they have basically a B or C team, I could even say, and they are still so dominant. It doesn't matter who they throw on. It was just something to just watch this team play under Pep Guardiola. It's you know, it's free-flowing, beautiful football to watch, seriously. And I'm just – I can admire it, even though I'm very jealous of what they're doing. So I'm just curious what you thought, you know, could be the difference for Liverpool. And I guess it really is City has to drop a little bit, you know, like their intensity. But that's going to be hard because, again, just new players come in. They can just change it up. Pep has the players. If things aren't going right, just put in another player. That's what's crazy about them. All right, my friend, let's get into this. Let's start with our preview by looking a little bit deeper into Liverpool. And what I usually do is I go to whoscored.com and read off their strengths and weaknesses of what they say and also the style of play and get your thoughts if they match up with what you know about Liverpool. So let's start with strengths. This is what whoscored.com says, and then feel free to add a strength that maybe they're not mentioning. It says very strong defending set pieces, creating chances through individual skill, shooting from direct free kicks, finishing scoring chances, counterattacks, attack and set pieces, all strong. Those are all strengths. It says style of play, short passes, possession football, control the game in the opposition's half, attack through the middle, non-aggressive, play the offside trap. So I gave you style of play and strengths. Does that match up with what you know of Liverpool?
I'd say so, yeah. I think the one thing I probably would add to it is energy from midfield, which it tends to be quite an underrated quality, and particularly if Jordan Henderson is available, which from what Jurgen Klopp said on Friday was that he will be in contention. And because Henderson offers a remarkable engine. I mean, I don't personally believe he offers much else in the way of qualities and attributes, but you don't really need it when you have that ability to drive a team on with your just pure pace. And that, I think that's what Liverpool have with Henderson. And as well, I think, you know, it's not just pace, which they have in the midfield drive. They also have James Milner in there. Gini Wijnaldum has become quite a versatile midfielder. He was initially an attacking central midfielder, and he's become more of a versatile player in that he can drop back into a holding position. So, and he's done that remarkably well. So there are players who are interchangeable. Obviously, again, Milner's a player who can play practically anywhere on the pitch. He spent a time in the season before last at left back. So they've got that option as well as what they offer in attack. And again, as you said there, the defence is quite solid at defending. Yep. Although I think some people would argue it's not that solid if you look at the Red Star Belgrade results.
Okay, well, that's funny that you say that because the weaknesses that are listed from whoscored.com, aerial duels, very weak. And then it says defending against through ball attacks. So you've already talked a little bit about the aerial duels. What about the through ball attacks?
I think to a degree, yeah. I think Liverpool have been undone quite a few times on that. I think if you look at some of the goals they conceded, I think probably the Champions League equalised against PSG in the game they obviously won. There was obviously a free ball that undid them there. And it's the sort of thing that Liverpool don't seem to be able to contend with. I don't know if it's something that they need to work on in terms of bringing in a defensive coach. It has been discussed quite a lot under the previous manager, Brendan Rodgers, that they were quite weak in defence. And maybe that's something that they need to look at working on, whether with an external coach or whether internally they do need to stop themselves being undone by just those three balls. And I think that the onus for that as well falls on the midfield, not just the defence. You know, the defence is the last line of attack before you get to Alisson Becker. But they obviously the midfield, and it has proved costly in the past that they haven't cut out these balls and even have been complicit. I mean, Wijnaldum's careless pass on Tuesday night was a classic example. It allowed Red Star to make inroads and to double their advantage at a time when Liverpool probably could have got themselves back in the game. So I think the culpability is twofold there.
Okay, very good there, my friend. All right. As we look towards this match, who are your key players for Liverpool against Fulham? Who has to play well?
Well, I think the strikers, obviously, I think that goes without saying. Yeah. I think probably whether Mohamed Salah or Sadio Mane or Roberto Firmino is on the score sheet, I think it's probably incidental. It's more about which one of them clicks into gear, because there have been a few problems in terms of Liverpool's attacking fluidity between those three. I think it was the Red Star Belgrade home game was probably the first time for about, I think it was 8 months since, oh sorry, 6 months since they'd all scored in the same match. I think I'm remembering that right. It was either that or the Cardiff City game. I forget which. They all play into one these days. But Salah's obviously had a lot of questions after his run of form. People were saying that he hadn't hit the heights this season that he did in the previous year. But I think a lot of people are misremembering that as well, because
yep.
Salah didn't actually hit a real, real good run of form until probably the midway point of the second half of our season. So from the March, April time, he was banging goals in for fun. And, you know, he went on a run of scoring. I think it was 10 goals in, I think it was 12 games or something like that. But you forget that there's a bit of mitigation there. You know, he scored 4 against Watford. He failed to find the target against Manchester United and Portsmouth in successive games. So, you know, these statistics can be skewed and can be scrutinised in various ways. But I think there is genuine concern about Roberto Firmino's form. He's not looked at his best, and you know he was obviously rested on Tuesday night against Red Star, and I don't know what it is. I don't know if it comes back to the Champions League final burnouts, because it was such an immense effort to get there. But I think it depends on who leads the line and who's on top form, because that will decide. If Xherdan Shaqiri plays, that's probably going to help the case a bit more, because he's been, I don't think he's had a poor game really since he's joined Liverpool. He's always had an impact. Even when he comes on late in the game, he really does change things, and we saw that in the PSG game in September. So there's a lot riding on him. And then beyond that, probably the goalkeeper and obviously the centre-back pairing of Van Dijk and Gomez, because they've got come in for a lot of criticism this week, and they really need to answer the critics.
Okay, excellent there, my friend. All right, before I ask you about form, commentary on form, I do have a very interesting stats comparison between the two teams where they are in the league, and I get this information from whoscored.com. These are offensive stats, so keep that in mind, but I find them fascinating when I look at form compared to Liverpool, and I have several categories, and so I want your thoughts on that and then go right into your thoughts on form. Let's start where both teams are on goals. Again, this information comes from whoscored.com. Fulham are tied at 15th with 11. Liverpool are at 4th with 21. Shots per game, Fulham are 9th in the league at 12.6. Liverpool are 5th at 14.4. Possession, Fulham are 7th in the league at 52.4. And Liverpool are 5th at 54.5. Passing percentage, Fulham are 7th at 81.2. Liverpool are 3rd at 84%. Crosses per game, Fulham are tied for dead last with 14, and Liverpool are tied at 10th with 17. Long balls, Fulham are 7th with 67, Liverpool are 17th at 56. In short passes, Fulham are 7th in the league at 443 per game, and Liverpool are 3rd with 543 per game. And I wanted to bring these stats to you, Richard, because you and I talked off air about the Tottenham match. You were there, and I think you can see the way Fulham want to play in these stats. Actually, they would like to play similar to, say, Manchester City and Liverpool. They obviously don't have the ability to do it at that level. But you can see through these stats the way Jokanović wants to play. So I wanted to share that with you and see how Fulham match up against Liverpool.
Well, I think statistically, I think that does bear out Jokanović's philosophy. I think, you know, a lot of clubs do lose the way when they come to the Premier League, and they did find themselves, you know, enslaved to some very dogmatic tactics. I saw it firsthand with Everton last season when they appointed Sam Allardyce. You know, it wasn't a sort of brand of football that Everton would want or would have entertained normally. And, you know, other clubs who are in similar situations where there is a threat of relegation, and whether it's in the middle distance or it's closer to home, you know, a lot of teams do end up abandoning philosophies and going down a different way of playing. But I mean, it's clearly kind of this is tried to carry on where he left off with obviously where they obviously aspire to be, which was obviously to get here in the Premier League. And you could see that in the Tottenham game. There was clearly something there, and obviously Tottenham came back for that, for those two goals. But you could see something there that I don't think you've seen in you haven't seen in a full side probably since they were last in the Premier League. In that, I mean, I remember the games under Martin Yol, and they weren't the best. And you know, this was more like what Fulham wants to do and how Fulham wants to play. But obviously,
exactly,
the results aren't translating, and that's the problem. You know, unfortunately, it is a results business, and you know, the methods might be right, but the right time and the right methods do not always collude. And this is where I think if he does lose his job, he'll be very unfortunate, because you know, as I say, I'm not. You know, I don't think you try and give every manager the benefit of the doubt, and you try and look at things from, you know, a clear perspective. But as you say with the statistics, they don't exactly scream, you know, long ball, you know, relegation, you know, that sort of approach. It doesn't scream that to me. It seems that a club that is obviously trying to play the right way, trying to mix it up, and trying everything possible within its own ideology. But it doesn't always work that way. You look at some of the results that could have gone in the favour. If you got 2 points at Wembley, that would be a massive, massive result. Sure. And you don't know how much momentum that has. And, you know, I think the players that Fulham have got as well, you know, they've gone on a really remarkable spending spree over the summer. It's not a case of, you know, this isn't a club that's being left like Newcastle, where, you know, the owner's not putting his hand in his pocket, or, you know, at Tottenham, where they're being hamstrung by a new stadium. You know, Fulham are putting money in because, you know, they've got to invest to stay in the Premier League, and they've recruited really well, whether it's through loan signings or permanent captures. There's been some remarkable recruitment gone on there. But again, it's just a case of why the methods aren't translating to the players, why the manager's approach doesn't seem to be getting through to them. It's a mystery to me, because I definitely saw enough at Wembley, and again, it's early season, so it can cloud your judgment slightly. And but from my own judgments on that and what I've seen in other games, there's clearly something there. It's just a case of persevering with it, really.
You know, and that's the struggle here, Richard. That's why I'm glad that we're having this conversation, you bringing up the Tottenham match, because as a supporter of Fulham, I see everything that you just said. I could even throw out the first half against Everton, where Fulham played very well in the first half. I thought they outplayed Everton, and then Everton turned up the pressure in the second half and got some goals, and that match was taken care of in the second half. But they seem to have the ability to put in some good halves of football. They just can't put in 90 minutes. And it's a result-based league. It's all results. And unfortunately, that's the situation Fulham are under right now. I think it's a combination. This is just my opinion. I told the guys on the cop table that it's a combination of injuries, combination of new players, and also Savisa learning the league and being able to try to adapt against certain opponents. And I think he is learning that, and there's a huge learning curve. And I think that this combination is why Fulham are where they are. They deserve to be in 20th right now. They do. They have not been good enough. But I've also seen glimpses of what you saw, Richard. That's why I'm glad that we're talking about that. Let me ask you, let's move on. What Fulham players concern you against Liverpool? I'm curious.
Well, I think the obvious one's got to be Mitrovic. I mean, again, he obviously showed he had enough to get in behind the Spurs defence and obviously get that equaliser. But he's also, I mean, his record last season in the Championship was really, really impressive. And, you know, he's always going to be a threat, and especially against a defensive line which is coming for, well, it's been shown it can be got at, let's put it that way, over the past few days. And I think, you know, these are the sorts of games that players like Mitrovic will relish. You know, you can't say that because he didn't really have a spectacular time at Newcastle that, you know, that you can condemn him to surplus. He's obviously shown up for him that he's a competent striker, very, very handy to have around the box, and who can strike when you need. And so, when I do think he'll be a problem. I think the other players, I think probably it goes without saying, Sessegnon is you know, a player who Liverpool are well aware of. Obviously, there's been, you know, there's been well documented the link between Sessegnon and Liverpool in the past. You know, we're probably looking at him, and not the only Premier League club, it has to be said, who are tracking him.
Sure.
But obviously, he's stayed at Fulham, and he's happy at Fulham, and you know, you can see what he offers as well. He really is a threat, and you know, he really caused him. So if you had a few problems on the right hand side, and I think a lot's going to hinge on that in terms of who Klopp plays a right back, because he's got the choice between Trent Alexander-Arnold and Joe Gomez. Now, if injury keeps Dejan Lovren out for a bit longer, then logically it's going to have to be Gomez, partner Van Dijk. But if not, Klopp's then going to decide whether Gomez is better suited to trying to shackle Sessegnon, or whether Alexander-Arnold is. And it's interesting because for the Manchester City game, Alexander-Arnold, funny enough, on his 20th birthday, the biggest present he was given, that he was benched, and Gomez was allowed to play at right back, and it did remarkable, I've got to say, considering, you know, the threat City offer, especially, you know, with the likes of Sterling and Silva, you know, they offer some real danger, and you know, Gomez is 20 years old, Alexander-Arnold's 20 years old, and you know, it's not really a surefire bet that either of them would start. You know, it's going to depend on the opposition, and I think that's where I think the versatility will come in handy, because you know, one of them is going to have to be really on their A game to keep hold of obsession on.
Okay, very good there, Richard. All right, let's go to matchups. I do this in this show, and let's start with Fulham's attack versus Liverpool's defense. And you've talked about several players on Fulham and also on Liverpool. So who do you give the advantage to here?
Well, I think it depends on what Liverpool defence turns up, really. I think again, at the Red Star Belgrade game, I think because it was so unforeseen what was going to happen there, and such a shock, really, in terms of, you know, how lapsed they were, I think it depends how quickly they recover. You know, Liverpool have lost games this season already, but not by any great margins. You know, we look at second string lost to Chelsea in the League Cup by one goal. Very close fourth game. And, you know, you can't really read too much into that, but obviously it was quite a close-run thing. And then the Napoli game in the Champions League was, again, it was a very tight game. There was very little going their way. There was very little coming out of the game in terms of Liverpool actually winning possession and that sort of thing. But I think the Red Star thing was just unprecedented for where this team is now in terms of the standards they set themselves defensively, how diligent they are. This was a wake-up call, and I think it will really depend on whether Van Dijk and Gomez or Lovren, if he plays, if they are psychologically over what happened, obviously, in Serbia.
Okay, excellent. All right, let's switch it to Liverpool's attack, which we know is impressive, but I think you've already mentioned isn't at the level that it was last season against Fulham's defense, which has been the worst in the league. But again, Jurkovic is trying to address that, make them more solid. And recently it's been a little bit better, and that's just saying seriously, just a little. So I would think that you would have to say Liverpool's attack have the advantage here.
You would, yeah. On paper, I think definitely that backs it up. But I think something that I think a lot of people need to remember about Liverpool, and I think it's probably quite promising for Fulham, is that Liverpool's attack, as good as it is, it isn't guaranteed to be free scoring every game, and the reason why I say this is because you look at the game against Cardiff City recently, another promoted side. Liverpool won it 4-1. The scoreline suggests it was an absolute rout, but until probably the last 15 minutes or last 20 minutes of the game, Liverpool were only two ahead, and it wasn't really. It was a weird game because Liverpool didn't really have a major foothold. Obviously, they led at half-time, they led at full-time, and the goal was, you know, raining in between. But there wasn't really that much from the game in the first half, particularly where you thought, Liverpool are going to come out of it and, you know, score three or four goals. You thought, this would be a 1-0, maybe a 2-0 if they're lucky. And it did appear to be, it was going to be a 2-0 game, I think, until they had that little onslaught with, you know, led by Shaqiri, and, you know, that drove Mane on and the like. There wasn't really that sort of feeling that Liverpool were, you know, and I think it speaks volumes of Liverpool and the level of expectancy of them this season. Everyone expects him to go out and score 4 or 5 goals, yep. And they expect it to be like it was, you know, in the Halcyon days when they were winning league titles at a canter. But I mean, I think people, again, I think history tends to cloud people's judgments, and particularly nostalgia, because Liverpool weren't running out every week and winning games 5-0, and you know, they weren't going out and trouncing at Arsenal and Tottenham and Nottingham Forest and Everton. They weren't going out and doing that every week. They were, you know, once in a blue moon things. They weren't, you know, they weren't routine. I mean, winning was routine, but
sure,
you know, scoring, racking up the goals was not routine. This is the thing that I think people need to realise. Just because City can score 6 goals doesn't mean that Liverpool needs to score 6 to be considered, you know, equals with them. And that was a point Jürgen Klopp made in his press conference this week. But just because City score 6 doesn't mean, you know, we have to score 6 to be considered as great as them.
Right.
But the reality is that, you know, people will perceive them that way. I've kind of agreed with this point a little bit, but you know, I think it will depend on, I think probably, you know, how the game pans out really, because the longer it goes on where Liverpool aren't, you know, asserting the dominance like it was against Cardiff, the more Fulham will fancy the chances. And you know, Cardiff obviously got a goal at Anfield, and you know, it did make for a fraught few minutes before Liverpool, you know, extended their leads. So I think probably attack Trump's defence on this, but again, it will depend on how the game pans out.
Okay, excellent. Richard, all right, now I want to ask you about an interesting battle. And Fulham can play 4-3-3 or say a 4-2-3-1, and I know Liverpool can do similar. So I'm curious about this central midfield battle, because Fulham's strength last season was the midfield three. There's no question about it, sets everything up. And that has now, the three players has changed from, I'm believing that it could be Kearney, Anguissa, and Seri. And if it's those three, those are the three players that I want to see build the midfield three for the future for Fulham, because I think that's where they need, these are the players that I think that need to be the midfield three. But you've already talked about the central midfield situation with Liverpool, and I'm just looking at whoscored.com. Like you said, this could change, but let's say it's Keita, Henderson, and Fabinho. So what are your thoughts about this matchup? Do you give Liverpool the advantage here? I think Fulham eventually can play with a Liverpool in central midfield. Maybe not right now because they don't have that cohesive three yet. But I'm curious your thoughts on this matchup here.
I think if Fabinho plays, I think a lot will depend on how he adapts and how quickly he adapts to the game. Because, you know, he's not underwhelmed, and he's not really done himself any disservice, but again, it does take time to adapt. Do I think probably Fulham will fancy the chances with Seri midfield, and maybe he could potentially best Fabinho on that one, potentially. But similarly, he could best Henderson, who's only coming back from injury. I think Liverpool will it's probably going to be more of an arm wrestle situation, that Liverpool will just about overpower them, because you know, the quality of their midfield options is greater than Fulham's, even with you know, Kearney and Seri in there. There is still a great amount of sway in Liverpool's favour in that one. So, but again, it will depend on who is the weak link, because it could be Henderson or it could be Fabinho. I mean, it could even be Keita if he plays.
Okay.
I think there's probably, obviously, do play back from injury. So you know, it's a bit tricky to ascertain who's going to be the weak link. And you know, obviously, players coming back from form. So. It's going to depend, really, but I think probably Liverpool will have enough.
Yeah, I would have to give you the advantage. And I think Fulham's midfield three will improve as the season progresses. But right now, I would have to give Liverpool the advantage. I agree with you there. Here's an interesting situation. I want to ask you about both coaches here, Jurgen Klopp and Slavisa Jokanovic. I normally say who has the advantage, but I want to ask you about these two guys in this way. Jokanovic is definitely learning the league, and he's struggling to learn the league. I want to ask you about Klopp when he first came to Liverpool. Did he have a learning curve?
I think to a degree, yeah. I think there's obviously, I mean, there were some games which Liverpool should have won on paper, even with, you know, a club that had been down on its walk in terms of, you know, it obviously changed managers. You still looked at it and thought, this is a team that they should be doing better. And I think the one that springs to mind was the draw with West Brom, where Klopp took the players on a lap of appreciation down toward the cop, and he was obviously derided for that. And actually, when you look back at it, it was a very, very vital lesson in terms of fostering a team spirit. But in terms of the league itself and adapting to it, I think he learned that you can't always play the gegenpress style of playing games at 110 miles an hour. And you know, essentially, I think it's probably the polite way we'll be saying is it's basically a continental version of the Blackpool model, the idea of, you know, they might score four, we'll score six. And we'll just keep hitting them. Which a lot of, you know, Klopp's performance at Borussia Dortmund were famous for. And, you know, right. That was a lot of things that, you know, people were enamoured with him for. So I think he's had to mix and match game management. I mean, there's been a few games over the past, I'd say, season and a half, maybe two seasons, two previous full seasons, rather, where Liverpool have needed to eke out the game rather than trying to hit another team for six. And I think that's been a definite positive in terms of Klopp's development. I think he's learned that you can't always go out. And again, you can't go out and just outscore your opponents. Obviously, you can try. But, you know, when you start going down that route, then, you know, the danger is, and Brendan Rodgers found it out, his predecessor, you can't score six because they will score seven. If you have that mentality of we can outscore them, it's going to come back to bite you. And Rodgers wasn't wet behind the ears. Rodgers had a season in the Premier League. He knew what to expect, and he still played this way, this sort of pseudo Barcelona style. Klopp, to his credit, hasn't tried to do that. He's actually tried to play, stay true to his principles, but also with an awareness of what the league requires and what the league is. And, you know, it's not a league where you have fancy tippy-tappy football all the time. You have some teams who can execute quite brilliantly, Man City, occasion points, but not every team is going to be like that. You're going to have teams like Southampton, like Cardiff, teams who are going to make it difficult for you. They might not always get the win, they might not always get the points, but they will make it difficult for you. And that's something that he's adapted to. Whether Jokanović can adapt to that, I'd like to think so, especially as he's got a bit of a grounding in that.
Yep.
He's had some time in the Championship before him. He's obviously seen how to do it through that hard route, because getting into the Premier League nowadays is not easy. Staying there is even harder, but getting in is definitely not an easy route. So I think he's had a grounding, but again, that doesn't guarantee anything, really. I mean, you look at some of the managers who've come from the lower leagues, where, you know, it is quite unforgiving and quite demanding. I mean, I think, you know, classic example was Carlos Cavajal, who went to Swansea City.
Yep.
Obviously spent some time in the Championship with Sheffield Wednesday and didn't really hit the heights that many were expecting. So it shows that, you know, you can't take experience for granted. But also, I think you have to have a willingness to learn. And I think this is what Jokanović is probably going to find out the hard way when the pressure cranks, is that he might need to change things slightly. But, you know, there's a difference between changing things slightly and abandoning your entire philosophy, which some managers and some clubs have done in the past. And again, Southampton is a very notable example of that.
Yep, and you and I talked about that, Richard, and I agree with you. And glad we're talking about this, because I wanted to look at Klopp. I know Fulham are going to always be at a different level than Liverpool, but to learn from you that Klopp had to learn the league and learn how to adjust within his style, and now Liverpool is where they are. And I think that's something that Jokanović needs to do. He's said this in several pressers, that he's a new manager in the Premier League. He's learning. And unfortunately, I think Fulham supporters are seeing that learning curve. But again, the one thing that I hope he gets right, Richard, that you mentioned, is that he does not go against his style, that he sticks with his style and try to find the middle ground between learning the league and playing within the league, so he can still adapt his style to the league. So I'm glad that we're talking about this, because I'm a big fan of Jokanović. I'm completely against sacking him. I've said this on Cottage Talk. I've done polls about it. And it's funny, Richard, because the polls that I've done are 55% not to sack him, the 45%, somewhere around there. But it's a slight advantage. But, you know, it just tells you that there's a split here. There's split amongst Fulham supporters. But my only thoughts on that is that I understand where that's coming from. But he doesn't become a bad manager overnight, which one of my co-hosts said on the prior show. And you have the proof that he can coach. And I've seen it. And it's now just up to him to be able to adapt his style and these players to play within his style. And they're responsible, just like he's responsible. All right, my friend, let's finish this up with my section of predictions. First, I want to go to you before you give your prediction on the match. Ask you these two questions. This is the first one. What does Liverpool need to do to win this match?
I think probably forget everything that happened on Tuesday night, I think, and just almost start afresh in terms of, you know, misremember that there wasn't a game on Tuesday night, essentially, because the mistakes that happened there, they were so uncharacteristic. I mean, Liverpool didn't really have a foothold in the game, and the defensive mistakes compounded it. And I think they probably need to look at the Arsenal game and what they did right, rather than what they did wrong in Belgrade. And I think that just comes down to, again, the time on Liverpool philosophy of same as last week, which, you know, served so many title-winning teams effortlessly and will serve Klopp's team effortlessly, irrespective of whether they win the league or not, because obviously we've established it might be trickier than it was for the predecessors. I think Liverpool just have to stick to what they know and not fixate on the defensive issue too much. It's just a case of being back on their A game and, you know, the result will follow. But again, you know, we saw against Cardiff, it wasn't a formality. And that's probably something that Fulham will cling to, is the fact that Cardiff managed to keep the score down relatively low for, I'd say, the best part of the game.
Sure.
Probably until the last probably 25, 30 minutes at most. And then when, you know, I think that's probably where Fulham will be looking to it. From a Liverpool perspective, probably just, again, keeping fresh in the memory of the Arsenal game rather than the Red Star defeat, because that's where I think if you start fixating on things like Liverpool managers in the past have done of where have we gone wrong rather than where we've gone right, if it's a blip, it's a blip. But, you know, there's nothing to suggest that what happened on Tuesday night was anything more than a blip. It was just lapses in concentration, nothing really. You'd say Liverpool are really struggling and this is going to haunt them for the rest of the season. This felt like a one-off, and okay. And I'm sure it will prove to be one-off. So that's what Liverpool need to do, really.
Okay. Now I'm going to put you in the shoes of Slavisa Jokanovic. What does he need to do to prepare his team and get them to win this match, which is going to be an incredible feat to pull that off? So I'm curious your thoughts on how they can do it before I get your view on it. Just want to mention while you were talking about this, I was thinking about how Fulham have played Man City twice. Again, one's in the Carabao Cup, so you're not seeing their entire strength there, but you're still seeing a pretty strong team. I saw a completely different approach against Man City the first time, which they lost 3-0. They went at them, which probably was a huge mistake, and it didn't work. Even though the scoreline was only 3-0, it could have been a lot worse. Second time around, it was, I believe, 2-0. But they looked more solid at the back, and actually one goal was I believe, a little bit of a deflection. And they actually just looked better against that team. So I want to ask you, knowing Liverpool, and, you know, again, you did see Fulham play against Tottenham, what did Fulham need to do to win this match?
I think probably, you touched upon it there, I think probably what they did right against Man City in the 2-0 defeat, it's probably what, and I'd even argue what they did right against Tottenham earlier in the season. Obviously, different parameters. Obviously, you know, players aren't available now who played then. But
yep,
there's obviously lessons to be learned there in the stylistics of it rather than the personnel. And I think there's definitely, I'd say Liverpool probably need to just disregard what happened on Tuesday night. I think you kind of just need to look at it and see where did he go wrong. Because it wasn't just one set piece that undid them. It was, you know, they were wearing them down from several set pieces, and, you know, it probably could have been a couple more conceded in that nature. But I think that's probably what Fulham should try and look at. And also, I think, as I said before, the right back situation is going to be very, very interesting, because whoever they put up against Sessegnon, I think, you kind of obviously, you know, the time frame is going to be quite limited in the build to kick off, but you've got two options essentially. You've got Gomez and you've got Alexander Arnold. You need to look at both of their weaknesses and see which one's made more high profile errors. And again, it's a tough one to do because I don't think either of them have, but you've got to look at that, and you've got to look at also if they're partnered with Gomez on the right hand side of central defence, what that's going to. Is that going to be an easy position to get at? Because when Dejan Lovren was a regular starter, even alongside Van Dijk, there was always this concern of when he's on the right side of the defence. I'm fairly certain it was the right side. I might be wrong on that one. He was always weaker on his right side than his left. So the same could be said for Gomez if he plays, or even if Lovren plays, which I feel would be quite unlikely. I feel like that's probably where they can get up the post down that right hand side, and probably there. In terms of probably midfield, it's going to depend again on who he plays. If he plays Fabinho, that could be a weak link.
Okay.
Henderson could be, depending on how he is fitness wise. But I mean, if Henderson isn't 100% fitness wise, and Jürgen Klopp's mind, Henderson won't start the game. He'll be on the bench, so it's probably going to come down to if Fabinho starts. But I think as well, what probably negates that is James Milner, who's really, really dependable, and we touched on that before. If he plays, I think getting a foothold in midfield is going to be tricky, so it's going to come down to...
that James Milner might be the most underrated player that I can remember in the Premier League, seriously? One of them, at least?
I don't know if he's the most underrated player. I think he's probably become a bit more rated than he was previously. I think probably when he was at Man City, 100%, yeah. I think there's quite a few players you could debate about who are the most underrated in the Premier League. I'd say Milner's probably.
I just think he's very valuable, is what I'm trying to say. I know how valuable
Milner is. He's a very worthwhile player, and you know, he's the sort of player that he's one of these interchangeable players. You know, we said it before. He played at left back for a time. He's obviously
he
got that ability where he can. Yeah, and that's the sort of, you need players like that, and that's why he was such an asset to Man City. And why when he was allowed to leave on a free transfer, I was surprised. I mean, I didn't. He's not a flashy player like David Silva or Sergio Aguero or anything like that, but he's clearly a defendable player, and one who's, you know, what he lacks in star attributes, he makes up with grit, and that's what you need. You need players who knuckle down, and Liverpool have had so many of them down the years. You look at some of the players back in the 70s and 80s, they weren't all flair players. They weren't all Ray Kennedys or Kenny Dalglishes and that sort of player. They weren't they weren't the best in show players, let's put it that way. They were, you know, players who would get down and deal with the nitty-gritty, really, and that's probably where Milner probably is set apart from others in the team. And that's what I think, you know, he is a brilliant asset to those two. Most of the race in the Premier League era, probably, I would agree to it prior to him leaving City, but probably I think the appreciation from now, I mean, he's become a bit of a cult following in the social media area. You know, you see all these, you know, these videos, and he joins in the fun himself. And you know, I think he's aware of his limitations, and he's aware of his strengths. And I think that's what makes him such a great player.
That's a great point. You know, he knows who he is, Richard. And
absolutely.
I've always been a fan of Milner's, and that's why maybe calling him the most underrated player didn't sound like I was giving him praise, but I was actually, that was my way of giving him praise, because he's a player that is an asset if you have him on his side. And I'm glad that we're talking about that. But we do have to finish this up, my friend. So let's go right to predictions. Give me your prediction, then I'll share mine.
I think probably, I can't see Fulham not scoring in this game, but I think it'd be quite probably similar to the last time they came to Anfield, probably 3-1, 4-1, probably. Okay. If they're being generous, probably 3-1.
Okay. I'm going to go for 3-0 and to Liverpool. And I actually did this on the cop table as well. I'm just not feeling good about this match based on what I recently saw against Huddersfield Town, then against Bournemouth and Cardiff City. But maybe they will rise to the occasion. I'm talking about the players, and Savisa will set them up correctly and prove me wrong and make it a game. I would be happy with a game, Richard. That's what I want to see. And it's interesting to see what the approach will be, because you and I are talking about this. Will he abandon his approach at some point? And I hope not. I hope that he can find the middle ground to keep his style and just understand that he needs to be more defensive within his style, especially against a team like Liverpool. I thought I saw that in the Carabao Cup, and I think if he can get his team set up that way, I think they can give you a game. I'm talking about Liverpool. So we'll see there, my friend. Listen, before we go, I just want to thank you again for doing this with me. Richard, just tell everyone how they can find you on Twitter and also where they can read you.
Okay. On Twitter, it is RichardBuxton_. I'm sure you'll put it out on Twitter anyway, but that's the best way to find me. And then you can read me in a few places, clickliverpool.com, Sportsnet in Canada, the newspaper in Singapore, and hopefully a few other places in the coming weeks and months.
Okay, excellent there. Well, listen, it's been wonderful doing this show with you, but it is time to wrap it up. For my special guest, Richard Buxton, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.